Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thanks for being here. Today I will present my account of imaginative resistance, but I would like more to go into the details of a part of the account, so I will not present the general framework, but more specific aspects of it. So, in general, first of all, what is imaginative resistance? Imaginative resistance is usually defined as difficulties that otherwise competent imaginers experience when imaginatively engaging with fiction. So in my account is basically a dualistic account of imaginative resistance. So I will treat the general distinction in the debate between descriptive versus moral violations in a text as eliciting two distinct types of imaginative resistance that I call respectively lower level and higher level resistance. So what I define as lower level resistance refers to descriptive violations in fiction and concerns some difficulties in processing the fictional content in imagination. By contrast, higher level resistance concerns our evaluative attitude towards content once it has been processed in imagination. So the idea is that lower level processes are prior to higher level ones, since we must have processed the content before endorsing an evaluative attitude towards it. And this taxonomy is based on three fundamental distinction criteria. That are first the different types of concepts involved. So the distinction again is between descriptive versus moral or more generally evaluative concepts. Second, the different types of imagination at stake. And third, the different nature and role of affects on the two levels. My focus in this talk is more on cases of descriptive violations in a text. So, basically, I will refer mainly to linguistic representations. So, in these cases, there is no an explicit evaluation in the text. And so what is crucial is that the imaginative prescription does not require us to endorse an evaluative attitude in imagination. So it follows from this that what I call lower level processes recruit a type of imagination in which the affective and the evaluative dimensions are not directly involved. I will primarily focus on the role of mental imagery at this lower level. So the aims of the talk are first to defend the idea that even descriptive violations can be sources of IR, of imaginative resistance. Second, to address the objection from contextuality, according to which IR is a contingent phenomenon which depends on either the fictional context or the imaginer subjective context. So in order to address the objection, I will find stable parameters for establishing if a contradiction is imaginable or not within a context. And in the light of these parameters, I will distinguish between tractable and intractable contradictions. So, In order to introduce my notion of lower level resistance, I will refer to the works of Yablo and Wedderson. So the idea that even descriptive violations can be sources of imaginative resistance is not new in the debate, but it has been already defended by what I call the symmetry thesis. So basically, the idea is that we are equally intolerant towards both descriptive and moral deviances in fiction. And so moral cases, in particular, are not spatial in this sense. So I side with Yablo and Wedderson in defending this, this idea, but I reject a monistic framework. So I maintain, again, that descriptive and moral cases elicit distinct types of imaginative resistance. And what I will defend, especially in this talk, is that not every case of descriptive violation causes IR, but only the cases I define as intractable. So a paradigmatic example, what I take as paradigmatic example of resistance of a lower level kind is this story that has been provided by Yablo, Stephen Yablo. So they flipped, they flopped down beneath the giant maple, one more item to find, and yet the game seemed lost. "Hang on," Sally said, "it's staring us in the face. This is a maple tree we are under." She grabbed a five-fingered leaf. Here was the oval they needed. So, in this story, we are required to imagine that a five-fingered leaf can be oval. In order to elucidate this, this story, this example, I will primarily refer to Yablo's account of response-enabled concepts. So the idea is that the, a concept like oval is an example of a response-enabled concept. Response-enabled concepts are a special kind of observational concepts, since they since we usually grasp this kind of concept experientially and not intellectually. So, quoting Yablo, to determine their extension in a word, we must cast our gaze over that word. So, we cannot establish the extension a priori. And in this, in this respect, they are very similar to response-dependent concepts like ticklish, tantalizing, painful to behold. But what is crucial and what distinguishes this special kind of observational concepts is that they remain stable across words. So, unlike response-enabled concepts, our responses do not determine the extension of the concept, but rather they track it. So they give access to it, but they do not dictate the extension. What is important for my account is that Yablo associates response-enabled concept with recognitional patterns. And for instance, we normally grasp the extension of oval with reference to a specific recognitional pattern that is egg-shaped. And recognitional patterns, what I would like to emphasize is that recognitional patterns have a perceptual nature. So they are linked to our perceptual and reactive dispositions. So my thesis is that the ability to successfully recognize a pattern depends on mental imagery in a given sense, modality or modalities. Where mental imagery is special type, specific type of representation, which is crucially related to our perceptual phenomenology. So again, we associate the meaning of oval with a specific response, in a sense modality, typically in the visual domain, and this response, so the associated recognitional pattern, is itself related to an instance of mental imagery in that modality. So, this being the case, we can say that the reason why we cannot easily imagine Yablo's story, so the reason why we cannot easily imagine that a five-fingered leaf can be oval is to be found in a cognitive conflict between recognitional patterns and so between mental images. So when response-enabled concepts feature in a contradictory statement, they typically trigger to incompatible instances of mental imagery that the reader is unable to integrate into the relevant sense modality. So the source of what I call lower level resistance is the violation of our standard responses in fiction, and typically manifests itself as a conflict at the level of mental imagery. I am aware that this account has some problems that are, first of all, a first problem is that we can say that our recognitional abilities are not necessarily linked to the capacity of forming mental images. And relating to this, another problem for this account is that of aphantasia. What I can say for now is that plausibly aphantasics, so people who cannot form at least consciously mental images, perform the task in a similar way. So when they read the Yablo story, they experience as well imaginative resistance as a result, again, of a conflict between the recognitional patterns, but recognitional patterns that are not represented imagistically in this case. So I leave open the possibility that recognitional patterns can be represented not only imagistically, but also in other ways. So the advantage of Yablo account is that it identifies a specific type of descriptive violations. And so it accounts for the fact that not every kind of descriptive violation in fiction elicits IR. And similarly, not every kind of difficulty in mental imagery leads to imaginative resistance. So for instance, we have difficulty in representing a chiliagon, a very complex polygon, but this does not count as a proper example of imaginative resistance, since it does not involve a conflict between recognitional patterns. So I would like now to focus on a fundamental objection that is an objection that can be applied also to moral violations, but I will focus on this objection as applied to descriptive violations. So what I call contextualism, or the objection from contextuality, refers to context to argue that IR is not a genuine puzzling phenomenon. So the basic idea is that the same contradictory proposition can elicit different resistance reactions depending on either the fictional context, specified by the work, or the imaginer context of interpretation. So As a consequence, IR is only a contingent phenomenon since it can be overcome if the appropriate context is provided. So, against this objection, I claim that IR is a genuine phenomenon which stems only from intractable contradictions. So we can say that once the criteria for intractability and tractability are specified, it is possible to predict if the relevant proposition is imaginable or not in the context. So I would like to start with a version of contextualism that I call fictional contextualism that has been stated by Kathleen Stock. She focuses on moral cases of IR, but I think that a similar objection can be applied also to descriptive cases. So the objection goes as follows. A contradictory sentence P can always be imagined if embedded within a coherent fictional context. So if the appropriate context is provided, resistance does not arise. Conclusion, imaginative resistance is not a puzzling phenomenon since it results from the contingent incomprehensibility of the relevant proposition. So I reject the conclusion of this argument, and I argue again that we can find stable criteria for classifying a proposition as tractable or intractable in a context. This is the Tower of Goldbach, an example that has been provided by Gendler, in which I quoted only a part of the story, but the idea is that after God's decree, 12 was no longer the sum of two primes. So as a result of human hubris, God decides to modify this mathematical principle. So it is a story which involves a mathematical impossibility. So following Gendler, the reason why we can conceive impossibilities in fiction is that we focus on precise aspects of the content, engaging our selective attention, like in games of make-believe. So in the story, we can imagine that 12 is no longer the sum of two primes, since we imagine P under a certain aspect, so as the effect of God's decree. So against Gendler, I maintain that the reason why this mathematical contradiction is tractable, is perceived as tractable, is not to be related to selective attention, but is due to certain specific parameters. First of all, the story focuses on pure theoretical concepts, so the story does not involve response-enabled concepts. And as a consequence of this, the story does not concern how we respond to things, but how things are in themselves. If we consider now a slightly modified version of the story, if we consider a slightly modified version of the story, so if we replace theoretical concept with response-enabled concepts, we can find that story, the contradiction, is tractable as well. No, so this version, this modified story, in this modified story, we have that after God's decree, ovals were four-cornered. So this seems to be a counterexample to my account, since despite the employment of response-enabled concepts, the contradiction is still seems still tractable, imaginable in the context. But again, the reason is to be found in specific contextual factors. In fact, in this case, we can say that God acts on how things are in themselves and not on how we respond to things. So our responses are not directly at stake, and we interpret the action as resulting in changing the meaning of oval, since it affects the very feature by which things are recognized as ovals. A different version of contextualism is subjective contextualism. So subjective contextualism refers again to context, but the imaginary subjective context. So if we apply this objection to descriptive violation, a potential objection might appeal to our individual cognitive strategies and mental styles, and says that imaginative resistance is again contingent because it depends on the specific strategies adopted by the subject to process the content in imagination. So again, the objection goes as follows. A contradictory sentence P can always be imagined if the subject adopts the appropriate cognitive strategies. If the appropriate strategies are employed, resistance does not arise. Conclusion: imaginative resistance is not a puzzling phenomenon. I will consider in particular a specific strategy that I call the strategy of ambiguity. So a possibility when confronted with Yablo's story is to break down the object into simpler components, so the oval shape on the one end and the five-fingered shape on the other. And this would result in a sort of ambiguous visual object. An ambiguous content can be formalized as a disjunctive, A or B, but it cannot be reduced. It can be reduced neither to A nor to B. So it is sometimes referred to as non-primeness in this sense. And paradigmatic examples of ambiguous visual objects are, for instance, the duck rabbit case, but also some of Escher paintings, like the one in the image, convex and concave. The objection could say that if the subject manages to build an ambiguous object, imaginative resistance does not arise. But the problem with this objection is that it conflates ambiguity and inconsistency. So Yablo's story does not involve a verbal ambiguity. So we are prescribed not to imagine a disjunctive content, but rather the conjunction of the two components. And this is a task we are unable to perform for the reasons that I've stated. So summing up, in response to fictional contextualism, I have argued that IR is not contingent, but rather it is necessitated by specific parameters of tractability and intractability. I have argued that lower level resistance stems from intractable descriptive violations, and I have defined a descriptive I have defined intractability as depending on specific criteria that are The fictional context involves response-enabled concepts. The fictional context concerns how we respond to things and not how things are in themselves. Our responses are explicitly contradicted but not invalidated in the context. In response to subjective contextualism, I have referred to the strategy of ambiguity to show that the adoption of cognitive strategies to process the contradictory content in imagination results in a violation of the work's prescription. That's all. Thanks.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.